hoping that you understand. You ain't the man to tell you in demand. Just pray to God we keep you in the plan. You ain't the man to tell you in it.
Hey there, welcome to Time Out with Ty, episode 61. I'm here this time around with my man Josh Eberly, who is a writer at Hoop Mag and at Press Basketball occasionally. We're here to talk about NBA Twitter and some other things like that, more so than just actual the NBA today. It's a little bit of a different conversation, but one I think is going to be very interesting to a lot of people who are on NBA Twitter. How's it going, Josh?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on. I think I hopped on to talk some Bucks a while ago, but it's been a bit.
Yeah, it's definitely been a while. Thanks for coming back. I guess hopefully it wasn't too bad of an experience last time, considering you're back here.
No, it was good times.
Before we get into it, we should probably just take a moment here to pay some respects. As I'm sure everyone by the time this goes up has heard, Craig Sager has passed away from leukemia. I can't speak for you, but I'm sure you, like me, and pretty much everyone else who knew or knew of Sager, it's just really sad. I mean, he was a fantastic voice, a fantastic presence on NBA games, and everything he brought is definitely going to be missed from now on.
Yeah, absolutely. I think with celebrity grief for myself, sometimes it doesn't really hit me. And when people are sad on social media and stuff, I'm not really sure how that connection forms with an actor or musician. But when I saw the news today, I literally just sat in my chair at work and froze for a moment. And I mean, this man who, you know, most of us have never met has been guiding us through the NBA for years and years and years. He's been a staple of this game and of media and those of us who hope to one day be full time in the media. I mean, he stood for a lot of things and he was a respectful guy and he was a funny guy. And yeah, it was definitely a tough loss for the community today.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the things, and there's many, but one of the things that really made Craig Sager stand out was just he was always so positive and happy, even going through, you know, the disease he was fighting with. He never let it affect his attitude, and he was just always such a seemingly kind person, you know, on the broadcast. So it's tough, but the show does go on, unfortunately.
Yeah. It is. You know, we won't do sad stories, but fighting cancer is an awful, terrible thing. Mm-hmm. And to do that in the public eye like he did and remain that happy, cheerful guy and to show up to work, that says a lot.
Yeah, it certainly does. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people saying a lot of even more eloquent things than we just did about Mr. Sager. But rest in peace for sure. Let's move to the topic previously mentioned, though. You had started tweeting about tweeting about Twitter, basically, the sort of funny things that pop up on NBA Twitter. Do you just want to give a sort of brief explanation of, like, how did you come to think about it like that? Because, I mean, we both use Twitter every day, but I don't think about it too much. I saw your tweets, and I was like, that's interesting. That would be a good conversation. So was it anything that just, like, sparked that thought in your mind, or was it just something you've been thinking about for a while?
It's something that's been on my mind for a while. Just, you know, NBA and Twitter goes together so seamlessly, and I think it really has become the focal point for discussion about basketball. And it's just a lot of us, yourself, myself, many writers, many fans, spend so much time on it. It really has become a community. And I don't remember what got me thinking about it a couple of months ago, just some of the do's and don'ts and how there's actually taboos on Twitter, things you can't do, things you shouldn't do. You know, certain people you got to approach in certain ways. And it just really made me think about, you know, how this whole new class system on NBA Twitter. And when I brought it up actually on the timeline yesterday or the day before, it was, you know, I had a DM conversation with a few people just being like, is anyone else noticing these things? Oh, yeah. And this would be a cool paper. Unfortunately, I'm graduated now. But if I thought about it a couple years ago. But, yeah, so I don't know. I just started brainstorming. And then all of a sudden, everyone was like, chiming in and agreeing or had their own takes. And yeah, I mean, it is kind of an interesting conversation if you're into that sociology, communications, human, virtual world discussion.
Right. I mean, it's certainly interesting. Let's talk about the classes at first. I think that's certainly a thing. It's like if you get to a certain amount of followers, and it's not just followers, you know, there's respect to be earned too. But it's, I don't know how many I would say it's sort of broken down into. I mean, it's easy, like at the top you have, you know, got Woj, you know, Matt Moore, Zach Lowe, like real, like everyone knows of those guys. At the bottom you have your Twitter eggs. I think the in between is sort of the more interesting part, right? I feel like there's, you probably could simplify it, but I think there's probably at least like what, 4 or 5 tiers.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably more if we really got, if we sat down and put a lot more time than I think we're going to put in today. I mean, yeah. I think you could really go 10, 12 tiers deep, and I would even start higher than above Lowe and Bill Simmons and Moore and all of that. I would say the players or the owners or like NBA related personnel might even be a step above that. And there's just kind of like this conscious trickle down effect where like only certain people acknowledge certain people. And I mean, obviously everyone's different. It's not a perfect system, but you just, you know, people tend to talk to and discuss and interact with people that are on the same level with them. And it kind of builds this crazy system where everyone at the bottom is looking to get, you know, some respect or some engagement from the people above them. And it's this constant back and forth. And it, yeah, I mean, it really has been something I've thought about, and it's so fascinating, especially when we're talking about class system today in real life, you're not really confronted with it. And I know for myself, you kind of hang out with people in your own station, right? People you work with, people you're around. You probably don't hang out with the CEO of the company you work for, et cetera, but that's not really something you see on an everyday level. You're not at the same coffee shop as your boss's boss, right? I mean, you're at different places. Where on Twitter, all of these things are happening at the same time right in front of you. You know, you're watching Rudy Gobert and Evan Fournier talk back and forth. You're watching Matt Moore and Zach Lowe talk back and forth. And it just kind of goes down the chain, but you're still there. And I just think that's a really interesting dynamic.
Yeah, that's a fascinating way to look at it. It's like, it's really everyone's in the same room, but just a lot of people don't listen to a lot of other people, essentially. It's certainly, it's like I don't even know how to, like the tiers, like you can talk to pretty much anyone below you. Like if a player adds me, I'm going to respond pretty damn quickly. But vice versa, it's almost like seen as rare if someone, you know, mentions someone who's got significantly less followers or significantly less sort of acclaim, I guess. Like, it's like, I remember like twice, I think, that Zach Lowe had mentioned me when I added him first and then he responded. It wasn't like he just out of the blue hit me up. And it's like something like that I remember. Whereas I'm sure if you ask Zach Lowe, hey, do you remember when Ty Windisch, he tweeted with you or you tweeted with him? He would say, no, of course not. You know, I have 300 or however many thousand followers. I think this is an interesting conversation for us to have, because I'm sitting at roughly 733 followers. It's not roughly. That's exactly what it is. It might change by the time this comes out, but that's it. And you're at 44,200. And I don't think you're going to know the exact number. That'd be impressive.
No, I don't know off the top of my head. But what you said is very true. And it's fascinating that there's this need, if you're the like you said, if you're the lower on this chain and you tweet at Zach,
yeah,
and Zach Lowe responds to you, you feel obligated. You got to hit him back.
Right.
And same thing when I had like 500 followers, I would tweet at athletes all the time when I was younger. I think like 18, I was tweeting at athletes about their game and stuff. And once in a while, when one of them replied, like DeMarcus Ware replied to me one time, I was like, wow, you know, this is the craziest thing. DeMarcus Ware sent 50 characters my way. I got to send them 50 wittier characters right back. But it does. The way that it's set up currently, it builds this back and forth. If you don't get to be part of that back and forth, you're just so excited for that chance to interact. And yeah, it's a really weird, weird dynamic, and it breeds some good things and it breeds some bad things.
I was just going to say, do you see real problems with the way things work? One thing that I think about, and I won't just ask you all the questions, I will contribute here as well. One thing I sort of notice is that people on higher tiers, but not highest, if you know what I mean. So like a few down, I'm not talking about your Zach Lowe's here. I'm talking about people, you know, less known than that, but still with, you know, more followers than I. Sort of, there's a tendency to just often ignore people below them, even if there's valid points being brought up, especially if it's a dialogue, not just like on something they wrote or just a random tweet, but if there's a dialogue going on. One of the things I noticed that seems damaging is there's like just this almost wind tunnel where everyone will agree with the guy who's bigger, even if they're not necessarily correct in that instance. That's one of the things that I really see sometimes. I'm like, oh, come on. Like, that's not – at least give the other guy a chance. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. There's, I think, two ways that you look at this. And I'm guilty of it sometimes too, where you're talking to someone and you're having a conversation that turns to a bit of a debate, or there's, you know, some sort of conflict. And you're going back and forth, and then they hit you with either, you know, hopefully it's a respectful point that catches you off guard, mm-hmm. and you're like, oh, you know, I've lost, or yeah. I can't counter that. So you don't reply, right? So now, but the last, if you have the bigger following, the last comment that a lot of people are going to see is the one that you sent out previously. So this person that you were having this conversation with isn't really getting the validation that they probably deserve for making a good point. I mean, a lot of that happens because, unfortunately, on Twitter, there's a lot of disrespectful conversation. Things go in a direction where, you know, there's really no need to address people. But yeah, I think there's definitely that. You're grabbing a microphone every time you tweet, right? And, you know, so at your microphone, you've got how many followers did you say you had?
733.
So you're shouting on that. You're hitting that mic as hard as you can, and you're yelling. Those 733 people, let's say 50 of them are on the timeline at that time. They're bouncing up and down with your take. But if someone with 20,000 or 100,000 or a million followers hits that mic, they're just in a bigger gym, and they're just going to have more people jumping up and down. And even if your point was better, it's hard to get that across, right? I mean, that's why social media is so great, because we all have our own podium to build on. But at the same time, just because your podium's smaller doesn't mean your points aren't, you know, any less great or worse in that context. And it's sometimes hard to figure that out.
Right. And that's why it's always cool when you see someone who does have the platform. And I know you're probably one of the more respectful NBA Twitter power users, which is a lot of adjectives there. But I think that's true. And you tend to give... people, you tend to give both sides of things, which I think is cool. There's a lot of people who don't do that. Like, I'm not in a position to really, it's not too comparative because I just don't get added that much. But I try to respond to pretty much everything, unless it's just like pure disrespect. Like, if you're just like, well, you're an idiot, well, all right, then I'm not going to reply to that. But if, you know, if it's like, I get a fair amount of tweets from mostly Bucks fans, because that's the team I cover on a daily basis, you know, asking questions or making points. And I really try to add those people back if they have as many followers as me, more or way less even, which it's hard to have way less than 733, but it does happen. Just because it should be about the conversation. I think that's really the point. I mean, obviously there's a lot of self-promotion that goes on, but the point of Twitter, in my opinion, and NBA Twitter especially, is to have these conversations and get more diversified opinions out there. And I think if you don't do that, that's when it's sort of like, well, what's the point of you being on this then?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. Obviously, sometimes you throw something out there and the internet eats it, or it goes south, or whatever it is. Like, it just, you know, expands too quickly. And I don't always respond to everyone, but I try to. You know, if people are respectful, I definitely try to make a conscious effort to reply to everyone that I can. And if people have repeated things, like I'll try to quote tweet them instead of just reply, so it shows up for everyone who might have had the same question. So there's things that you do, but I definitely think that there's, you know, a lot of snobbery out there where you just sometimes you just don't, you know, the person has X amount of followers or person isn't in your circle. And because of that, they don't get to have their say, or you don't acknowledge them, or whatever it is. And it's, I think it's kind of a problem with NBA Twitter, especially, and I'm sure it is with all the sub Twitters, but I mean, for yourself and I, NBA Twitter is where we're focused.
Right.
Where you sometimes get these conglomerates at the top or near the top, or like, you know, a rift above wherever, and one person goes with an idea and they kind of all follow that idea without really fact checking it or arguing it, and then anyone below them that tries to argue it, this is when the snobbery comes out. It was like, oh, you're an idiot, because person in tier X said the opposite of what you said, so you can't possibly be right because he has more followers than you, or she has more followers than you, and she wouldn't say that if she wasn't right. So you have less followers, you know, hence why would you challenge this established fact? And you see that a lot with like player rankings or, you know, team decisions, where this is a great idea, this is a bad idea, and you can't challenge it. And if you challenge it, you're stupid, even though a lot of us bite our tongues and think, well, I don't really know if that's true, but I don't want to be the goat on Twitter tonight, so I'm not going to say anything. And you get this bubble where there should be a nice flowing conversation, and everyone's kind of at a standstill because people either don't believe it and don't want to look stupid, or everyone's bought in hand over fist.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the biggest examples of that has got to be player defense, right? Like, I don't think James Harden's a terrific defender. I also don't think he's the worst defender anyone's ever heard of. I mean, it's starting to turn around now that he's been so damn good on the other end, which is ironic. But it's like his defense was just constantly vilified. And he had some of the ugliest lapses you'll see, I grant you that. But I watched James Harden, I don't think he's awful. Like, I don't think he's terrible, especially considering what he does on the other side. And then you look at like a guy who's not as big, but I think is a worse defender in Damian Lillard, and that didn't really get talked about that much. You know, people don't talk about Dame as a great defender, but it didn't get torn apart. And it's not just an NBA Twitter thing, but it's interesting. Like, if you look at like advanced statistics and all this, Harden rates better than Lillard last year, and he was better on offense too. But Lillard got the All NBA nod, and Harden didn't. So it's interesting how these narratives can be powerful. I mean, I think James Harden was better than Damian Lillard last year, and Harden deserved the nod, but Lillard got it instead. How much does the no defense narrative play into that kind of thing? I'm not saying NBA Twitter decides all NBA teams, but it's just interesting to see, like you said, how these narratives can just sort of build because a few people say it, a few important people, and then it's a thing that just people believe in general.
And this conversation is so good, and I feel like I should have notes on notes because there's just so many. Every time you say something, I want to take it so many directions. But like, I'm just like, for briefly, I'm going to touch on that Lillard Harden situation, and that absolutely could be the defensive narrative that built and built and built from like Harden's not a good defender to like Harden's a terrible defender to like Harden's a pylon. And I'm guilty of it. I think we're all guilty of it. You have fun and you want that interaction, so you know people tweet the photo of like, oh, a picture of Harden's defense. It's like an empty field or something,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And it's like a joke, and you know, people take it further, but it's kind of in the same breath as like news where you advertise this idea that isn't fully true, and people in your circle might know that, yeah, I mean, Harden's not actually a pylon. Like, if you follow me, I don't think Harden's actually a pylon, but I don't think he's a good defender. And however, now there's all these other fans who aren't kind of in that conglomerate, that aren't in that group, that are like, oh wow, he's that bad. And, you know, and you get YouTube videos or whatever of his worst highlights, and you add to that fire. But with Lillard and Harden, what's really interesting is, for me, I think it's about play style, right? James Harden, his tacky grab your arm for the foul, his, like, flopping, all that. We hate that, right? Everybody hates that.
Yeah, it's ugly. It's ugly stuff.
Even though it's great basketball and it gets into the line at a high rate and scores points with insane efficiency, the way that he scores those points doesn't appeal to people. So that's part of it. And then Damian Lillard is the exact opposite. Damian Lillard is your typical gunner. He's the modern Allen Iverson, maybe Gilbert Arenas, somewhere in there. He chucks it all the time. And when he's hot, it's so exciting and so much fun because he's just feeling it. He's pulling up from everywhere. People are cheering. The game's close because he doesn't play defense, and they aren't a good defensive team. So you get this feeling that he's always like this clutch, crazy player. But at the same time, he's shooting, you know, 40% in the playoffs or whatever it was, while Harden is getting to the line, doing the work, but it's not as pretty. And you'll see that all the time where there's players that if they don't do it in the way that best caters to the fans, then they get, you know, looked down on or they're worse off.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you talk about maligned players, Harden's up there. I think number one's Carmelo Anthony, though, right? Like, Carmelo Anthony, it feels like everyone's split on Carmelo. He's either the best or the most overrated star ever. You know, he's garbage because they never win. And it sort of reminds me, and I made this point to Joey Burbs, who does the intro and outro music of this podcast, like a week ago. It reminds me of the J. Cole thing. Like, everyone either hates J. Cole or they love J. Cole. J. Cole is either, you know, the greatest MC since whoever is the last greatest in your opinion, or, you know, his music is hot trash. Like, it reminds me of the Carmelo thing. There's no in between. Like, everyone has to be one way or the other. I just don't get it. Like, I feel the same about both, essentially. And I think they're both fine. I think Carmelo's good at what he does. He's not fantastic. He's not top five, or he's not top 10 anymore. But he's not terrible. And the same with J. Cole. I enjoy J. Cole's music, but I don't think he's the best ever. But I don't think it's trash. I think it's weird how with certain players, certain music artists, probably movies, TV shows, anything, there's like these certain ones where we just feel so divided on. And I wonder why. Like, why do you have to have such strong feelings on Carmelo Anthony and J. Cole?
Yeah, it's, you know, humble brag. One of the coolest things that's happened to me since I, you know, started writing and stuff is Bleacher Report, you know, fires off my tweets sometimes on their team stream app.
That's what's up.
And it's super cool. But, you know, people all hit me up like, oh, I saw you said this. But with that comes a ton of Knicks fans who are on that one side of the spectrum, right?
Yeah.
So if you say anything, if you're like, oh, wow, Carmelo's had a good season, but still not as great as, you know, LeBron James, who's, you know, one of the five or six best players to ever play this game.
Yeah.
You get a ton of people who are angry with you for no reason, and it's ridiculous, and you have these conversations, and you try to sort through to find people who want to have respectful conversations, but the whole time you're getting poo flung at you from the bleachers. So, I mean, it kind of devolves as you go along, but on the same breath, like, you know, you put out something positive, you know, whatever it is, Carmelo had a great game. Last year, you know, before he got hurt, he was playmaking at a higher rate than he ever had before. I remember, I'm not going to say who it was, but I remember throwing out a tweet saying, like, it's impressive that Melo has changed his role in some regard to better facilitate with this team. And a pretty well-known sports person, like, quoted the tweet and was like, yeah, but you'll never win with him as your best player. He's, you know, a chucker, doesn't play defense. And like, you know, fine if you have that opinion, but it doesn't negate what I was saying in that moment. It wasn't really constructive in any way. And like you said, it's this spectrum. You know, people are far right and they're far left. And we can get really crazy and we can talk about politics too. And it's the same thing. People either they grow up blue or they grow up red in the States, right? And you have this allegiance that you're not really questioning or checking or wondering if there's somewhere in the middle you could be. You're just always on that side. And I mean, that's part of what makes sports great is that, like, fan attitude, but at the same time it also makes sports bad because you get some terrible, terrible stuff come out of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's now that we've linked together J. Cole, the 2016 presidential election, and Carmelo Anthony, this is a peak podcast moment. But I think you're right and that these things are all related. And I mean, as frivolous as two of them are compared to the third, it's the same general principle in that, like, people like having a side, but they don't really care enough, or not care enough, but they don't really enjoy doing research to find out what that means. Like, there's people I know, a lot of people I know, because, you know, if you write about the NBA for your passion, career, whatever, your friends will come to you as sort of the NBA guy, or they'll ask you, oftentimes very stupid, sorry, friends and family, NBA questions.
Oh, for sure.
And I get so much like, oh, you know, I hate LeBron. And I'm like, well, why? And they're like, oh, he's so full of himself. He said he was the greatest player in the league. And I'm like, well, who's arguing with him? Like, he's not wrong. And, like, what player doesn't think that? Do you think, like, Paul George wakes up like, ah, I'm number 8 and it feels amazing? No, like, everyone wants to be the best player in the league. But there's just, like, these narratives, and a lot of it gets built the same with politics, the same with music, by your tastemakers, you know, the talking heads on the shows, and these days the stationary heads on Twitter, who say something like, you know, LeBron sucks. LeBron will never be Jordan. LeBron doesn't have killer instinct. And a few people say those things with a million followers, and suddenly millions of people say those things, and they just become not fact, but they become accepted opinion by so many people. And it's the same we saw, you know, there's crooked Hillary, there's choker LeBron, there's trash J. Cole, all of this stuff. And it's like, it's crazy how people just buy into something just because someone else said it, without bothering to form their own opinion. Like, what do I think about this new J. Cole album? Do I like it? Do I not? Let me listen to it a couple times. Let me do a little research on, you know, why he made it like this. Let me read an interview. No, it's just, all right, well, you know, someone told me it was trash, so it sucks. Or someone said it was the best album ever, so forget Kendrick, J. Cole's number one and everyone else is trash. It's very interesting. I think it's a human nature sort of thing where, like, we all want to be accepted, but no one has the time/inclination to bother finding out why they're taking the side they're taking.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I'm grinning ear to ear right now. This is probably my favorite podcast I've ever done. I've had some gritty podcasts, some gritty radio stops, but, like, this is – so my day job when I'm not writing about the NBA, when I'm not watching about the NBA, is I actually work in a political – well, a legislature office here in Alberta in Canada.
Okay.
So, I mean, all of this stuff runs through my head all the time. But some of the stuff that you said is, like, I think that people honestly don't care. you know, whether it's laziness or whether it's like a lack of interest until, you know, shit hits the fan. Pardon my French here, but
that's fine.
It's this nature to like last minute reevaluate. And whether it was the election or whether it's a player, you know, let's take the NBA Twitter for the sake of this. But it's like, you know, we're gonna hit an all time high on metaphors and similes here today too.
Let's get it. Let's go get it.
But it's like a waterfall, right? And you know, if you have that big platform, when you're pouring whatever you're pouring over the waterfall, it's gonna flow through the land to all your people, and they're gonna take a drink, right? So, you know, the bigger the waterfall, the more people are drinking from it. And a good example, I think, for me is the other day I'm looking at, you know, last couple of weeks I've been looking at Ricky Rubio. And Ricky Rubio is pretty untouchable on NBA Twitter. Right? If you start to slander Ricky Rubio at all, one of the big heads is going to come at you and tell you there's a lot more value to his game that you don't see and yada, yada, yada. And he's been hurt. And there's like a million excuses. And I kind of bought into it for a long time. I was like, Zach Harper, he's there. He's in Minnesota. You know, he really knows this stuff. Ricky Rubio's got to be better than I think. And I went through all of last year with notion that Ricky Rubio was like secretly a top 15 point guard. We just hadn't really seen it, but he was, just because Zach Harper and a few other big talking heads were talking about this. And then as I'm watching the season, I'm like doing these, I'm charting something I was doing for Hoop where Rubio more than any, it's like the highest rate of any guard. He touches the ball 14 or 15 times for every one time he shoots it. And like, oof, by comparison, Steph Curry shoots it every four times he touches the ball. So you can see like there's this huge disparity, and it's almost selfish in the opposite way of like, this guard is such a lack of a threat. He's not a threat in any capacity that the defense just doesn't have to worry about him. And, you know, again, so I share that and I got, you know, smacked around. Well, you're not really accounting for this and this. Okay. So, you know, the other night I'm watching the Bulls game and Rubio is leading a 3-on-1. Grant is side by side with Rubio, doesn't even look at him, runs past him to the next player and gets the steal as Rubio throws it to him because he was so unwilling to attack the basket on the ground. It's just nuts. I'm kind of getting a little deeper in analysis here, but it's that same thing where I bought in. I just, in my heart right now, I feel like Ricky Rubio is a starting point guard in the NBA. Some of my research has said that. My eye test has said that. I wouldn't want Ricky Rubio to start on my favorite team. I don't think he helps you. But at the same time, Twitter had told me I was wrong for so long. It actually took me over a year just to challenge that one idea.
That's a great example. I'm glad this is the one you picked because I watched that same game. I saw that play, and it was so remarkable that he really just completely ignored Ricky Rubio's existence on the fast break. I finished a piece on Andrew Wiggins for Hoops Habit, another place I write, basically about, you know, I'm sure you saw the Wiggins is a bust thing. We can get into that too. That's a whole nother discussion. But it was, I looked at, have you seen this 3-ball site, the new video site?
Yeah.
Fantastic. I did just take a peek at the process. It's really cool. I used a couple of their videos in my piece. Bless you.
Thank you.
I thought that was a sneeze. I wasn't positive. But I used some of their videos, and one of them was Wiggins goes around a screen, and he's open, and he shoots from, like, I think it was 16 or 20 feet inside the arc. So it's one of those ugly long twos. And he ignores the man in the corner who's wide open for three. And I was curious, so I looked a little closer. The man in the corner was Rubio. So I thought, what's a worse shot? Wiggins taking a long two or Rubio taking a three? And Rubio's such a bad shooter, it's actually more efficient for Wiggins to take his long two than it is to get Rubio the wide open three. Because Rubio only makes like 23% of his threes. And I think you're right, like Rubio doesn't, he's a ball, he stops the motion of the offense because if he has the ball, no one's worried about him. Like, unless he's literally at the rim, the defense is like, sure, take the shot, we don't care. I don't know if that works in the NBA today. I don't think point guards can just not be a weapon at all. I mean, almost all point guards who are good can shoot. One of the few exceptions is Westbrook, and he's just so dominant athletically. It doesn't matter if he can't shoot. He's got the LeBron and the Giannis thing where he'll just get to the rim and be efficient anyway. It's weird. It's weird finding a place for Ricky Rubio, Elfrid Payton, and Rajon Rondo these days. If you can't shoot as a point guard, like, what do you do then? What's your value really to a team? And I think it's one of those things where no one wants to say a player just does not have a fit anywhere. And one of the other interesting things is, like you mentioned, Zach Harper with the Timberwolves. Like, I feel like I'm probably this way with Bucks players. Like, if you're a fan of a team, or if you cover a team all the time and or are a fan, you're going to have better analysis, but you're just going to be biased because you're just used to these players. You grow a little attached to them. So, like, I'm super high on Jabari Parker, even though a lot of people don't like him at all, just because I watch Jabari play every game. I watch Jabari film, read Jabari interviews, all this stuff. So it's, like, an interesting thing packed in there, like, the difference between having good, knowledgeable coverage of a team and being a little biased. I don't think you can really differentiate the two a lot of times. I mean, you're gonna form some relationships, even not even relationships, but just like attachments if you follow a player very closely. It's a little hard not to. You can still be honest, but you're gonna be a little swayed by that, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that homerism in media is pretty prevalent, especially from beat writers. I'm not trying to rip on all beat writers. Like, beat writers do a fantastic job, and they do have insight that nobody else has. So they absolutely serve a purpose. But let's go back to the bubble idea where, you know, I'm not saying Zach Harper's a homer. I'm not saying that's why he said that. But he's in this bubble with Ricky Rubio where he was watching him every day, and he's got the press credentials, so he's getting in all the scrums. And, I mean, Ricky Rubio is a really competitive guy, and he gives good interviews, and he's got that kind of Chris Paul ultra-competitive, we're going to be better, I can't believe we're losing, I hate losing, that we love to hear from athletes that take the game seriously. So all this comes in, he's in this bubble, but sometimes from the bubble you can't see what the guy 10 rows up looking at the whole court can see. That's the thing, right? You get lost in it. And I think Royce in Oklahoma is the easy example with Kevin Durant, who is obviously someone popped his bubble with Durant. I mean, the Warriors popped his bubble, and it just, his vision of things he was in a state where he just couldn't see the whole field because he was in such a state of shock at how this bubble had popped so quickly. And it's a big thing. And I mean, we go back to certain players get picked apart more than others, and maybe it's the market, and maybe it's that upper echelon Twitter was protecting Rubio. But when I shared this Vine, this play where Grant looked like, imagine a wide receiver running across the field and the corner doesn't even look at him and doubles a receiver running the other way. It was so unbelievable that a player could just, what's the first thing you learn? You got to take the ball if you're the guy closest to the ball.
Yeah.
And he just runs. He doesn't even look at him. And I think he got like 25, 30 retweets. And I swear if I tweeted, if that was Harden on the same play, if that was James Harden on the same play.
Oh, man.
Holy hell. 1,000 retweets. It really does come down to like, what is the foundational thoughts associated with this player? Who's backing these thoughts and who's opposing them? And if you don't buy the stock of the person opposing them as much as the person supporting them, then you just instantly overrule it. And it's a crazy, crazy idea.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it can be the homerism thing, right? Like, if someone shares a bad Jabari defense Vine, I'm probably not going to retweet it. I mean, I make fun of Jabari's defense a fair bit, honestly. But a lot of, like, if you love a player, not a love is a weird word, but you know what I mean. If you're a fan of a player, you might be less likely to share a Vine sort of tearing them down. And I think, really, if you're confident in the team you support, you should anyway. Because, like, you should know that, you know, all right, it's one Vine. Like, it happens. You can find a Vine of anyone getting postered or playing bad defense. You play in basketball for 82 games a year, you're going to get embarrassed sometimes. That's just the way it goes. But I think, really, what it comes from is just a general place of insecurity about teams. Like, if you're really worried about Ricky Rubio, you know, maybe not being able to play in the modern NBA as a starter, you're going to react differently if someone says, you know, Rubio's been horrible. You're going to be like, no, he's not. Rubio does things. If you feel like, you know, I think Rubio's a good player, someone will say Rubio's horrible, maybe you'll start more of an earnest conversation. I feel like a lot of fans tend to worry about their team secretly, you know, like, oh, do we actually stack up? You know, are the Hornets really good? Is Kemba going to last? So then if someone questions that said player or team, that's when the bristles really come out. You know, no, you're wrong. He's definitely good. While at the same time, they're sort of like, I hope he's good. I'm not sure. It's a weird sort of dynamic. Like, the more confident you are in your team, I feel like the less likely you are to really lash out. I mean, unless someone's just being, like, stupid. Like, oh, Kevin Durant's been terrible, then Warriors fans would probably get mad. But I don't know. I feel like it's easier to brush off if you're in a better place about your team. It's easier to say, oh, whatever. You know, you don't know what you're saying.
Yeah, I think so. And I don't mean to pick on Knicks fans again. Well, yeah, I do. Yeah, they deserve it.
Yeah, they totally do. They totally do.
So, but I think I posted something a couple weeks ago when the Knicks started to like really get going a little bit, and I was just farting around on the NBA stats page, as I think we all kind of do.
Oh yeah.
And I was looking, and the first, you know, I don't know, don't quote me on this, X amount of games, Porzingis was fourth in touches behind Rose, Jennings, and Melo. And then the next five, he was second in touches, and they were like 4-1 in those five games. And I was like, you know, you need to get Porzingis the ball more. And I shared the stat or whatever. And I didn't say anything negative about Rose, Melo, or Jennings. I just simply said he was fourth, and now he's second. And the Knicks seem to be prospering with that change. And I got tons and tons of comments about, yeah, well, we wouldn't be here if Melo didn't do this, or Rose didn't do this, or Melo didn't take these shots, and don't you understand that Porzingis doesn't get those touches if Melo isn't drawing imaginary triple teams every time he touches the ball? And it just got like so out of control, and like the spin that wasn't even put on it from myself was from these fans who are like insecure with the idea that even though he's on their own team, he's not the best player that they want him to be.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think maybe it's just like the people I follow. But I feel like I don't see an abundance of LeBron defenders every day. Like, there are certainly people who will smartly make cases about how good LeBron is. But, like, I feel like I see people using more venom to defend Carmelo than LeBron. Just because, like, if you're a Cavaliers fan, are you really worried when someone bashes LeBron James? No, you know he's the best. You know he's the best player in the world. So from time to time, it's certainly smart and justified to sort of say, no, like, you're wrong, LeBron's still great. But like, LeBron still gets questioned, but I feel like there's less, especially now that he won one in Cleveland. I think it's definitely subsided more, obviously. But I just think like the truly great players, you just don't worry about the criticism as much because everyone's going to get criticized. That's life. I mean, no one has a true 100% complete approval rating. But like, if you're a Carmelo fan and he gets criticized, you're more worried than, you know, a Steph Curry fan getting criticized or a Kevin Durant fan getting criticized.
Yeah, see, like, I would critique that a little bit and say, like, when a player is set in who they are, you don't worry about it.
Yeah.
So not even so much superstar, but, like, so for Cavs fans, they don't worry about LeBron. We all know he's the best. But they worry about Kyrie, right? Like, how does Kyrie relate to John Wall and Kyle Lowry? You know, is Kyrie really like going through this struggle, or is Kyrie, you know, good on defense, or would Kyrie be better? Would his numbers be better or worse than LeBron? Like, those kind of things are the things that get under the Cleveland fan skin because they see Kyrie as a future superstar if he isn't already, if they don't already see him as one. Whereas, like, not everyone on the NBA sit on that. Whereas, like, say a guy like Tony Allen, how often do you see people being like, wow, Tony Allen sucks at offense? Like, never. Nobody tweets about that because we all know what Tony Allen does is get in your grill, hand in your jersey, you know, swat the ball away, play defense, grind type player. So we're not worried about that. We're not tweeting about that. Like, once a player is established in what they do and what they're known for, I think that the fan need to like defend them or pump propaganda kind of dissipates a bit.
I would certainly agree with that. I think part of it too is probably market. Like, I feel like we hear about the flaws of like D'Angelo Russell and Carmelo Anthony and guys like that more because, I mean, they play in the largest media markets, whereas Tony Allen is in Memphis. And I'm sorry, Memphis fans, but not that many people care about Memphis. I mean, they're a fun team from what everything I hear. It's a really nice city. I've never been. I'd like to go. But it's just in a sort of like national sense, Memphis doesn't get talked about. So no one's really too concerned with Tony Allen because they're not concerned with the Memphis Grizzlies in the first place. Like, the Bucks were the same way, or still are this the same way, really. I mean, they have Giannis, who a lot of people are saying should be a lock for starting in the All-Star game, yet this tonight, I believe, is the first game they have on national TV all year, and there's not too many more coming afterwards. And we're all pretty confident it's because the Bulls are the opponent more than the Bucks, the reason that that game is on TNT. It's just the markets, they don't matter as much, I think, in getting free agents. I think we've gotten to a place where in the NBA, it's more about the pitch. Most people have money, although not really anymore. But if the money's there, it's mostly about like the pitch and the fit, because we've seen players become financially successful at the same time that they're you know, NBA successful. Like, if you win a ring, you'll get more exposure, you'll get more money. So I don't think the markets are that big in free agency anymore. Maybe a little bit. They still matter, but they're not everything. But in terms of how much a player gets talked about, I think they absolutely are.
Yeah, it plays a huge part. And I'll give Devin Booker and D'Angelo Russell as an example, where, like, Devin Booker, who was hot last year, got onto the national scene. His fans literally thought he was a messiah sent from above to save them. And D'Angelo Russell got slayed partly because he was an idiot with the whole Snapchat situation.
Yeah.
And the Lakers sucked and he was in the big market. Now, this year you're not hearing anything about Booker because he hasn't been good and his fans are quiet and the national media has no interest in covering Booker if he's not good, right? I mean, there's nothing to talk about with Phoenix right now. But you're still getting the, wow, D'Angelo Russell's been hurt. He hasn't been great. His team has done better, but he hasn't really grown and stuff because, again, it's the big market. He's going to be in the spotlight whether he likes it or not as long as he's there. But, I mean, that's always going to be part of the game. And don't worry too much about the national games, because if Giannis stays in Milwaukee long-term, you're going to get a bunch of them over the next 5-10 years.
Yeah, most likely, which I know a lot of fans are a little bittersweet about that, because we have a pretty damn good broadcast crew for the local games on Fox Sports Wisconsin. But, yeah, it's a double-edged sword, though, the spotlight, because, I mean, you can become huge through it. Like, Kobe's not Kobe if he plays his whole career in San Antonio. Let's just be honest. Like, Tim Duncan, everyone loves Tim Duncan, but Kobe is undoubtedly bigger, and his reputation is boosted from achieving the highest of highs in the biggest of markets. Whereas Duncan, you know, arguably just as good. And I don't want to get into Kobe versus Duncan right now, but they're at least roughly on the same level. The scales can tip either way depending on who you're talking to or what you're talking about. And he's just not on the same level of big as Kobe, because San Antonio, Texas is no Los Angeles. So I think that's like the positive. And then like the stuff we see with Russell right now is the negative, which, you know, if he has a fantastic month, it could flip and everyone could love D'Angelo Russell. And I think that will happen. It seems like he's a pretty likable guy. I think he's going to be good. I think D'Angelo Russell will experience the other end of the sword, like, oh, wow, I'm now very famous and popular because I play good basketball in Los Angeles.
Yeah. You know, this is like another one of like my theories on like how to be a fan / analyst fairly. And I have like this concept of like a pie, or, you know, what's your favorite like dessert?
My favorite dessert is probably either cake or ice cream.
Okay, so you got a big ass cake. Yeah, okay. You got this cake, and you're gonna give this cake to the Bucks for how well they played this year, but you're not gonna give them all an equal slice, because to be honest, Jason Terry, while he does run an interesting radio show on SiriusXM now, he's not donating as much to the Bucks as say Giannis. So you're gonna cut that cake in slices based on what people contributed, and I think that needs to apply to fans and that needs to apply to analysts. And unfortunately, it gets butchered all the time. We see it in football where, like, the quarterback gets the biggest piece of cake, whether they win or lose, whether it's fair or not fair. And with big markets in the NBA, it's the same thing. So if the Lakers continue to struggle, D'Angelo Russell's not shooting well, he's going to get the biggest slice of blame because he's the face of that franchise right now. Whereas if they keep, like, if they weren't, you know, they're trending down right now, but let's say they trend up again and he still hasn't improved his shooting at all, he's going to get a nice big piece of that cake because he's the face of it. Right. And that's the situation where things get blown out of proportion. But I think you got to come back to that and wonder about what's fair to give one guy and not fair to give another guy, so on, so on.
Yeah, I would certainly agree with that. Is there anything else you wanted to cover in terms of our NBA Twitter discussion here?
What else are we talking about? We're talking about kind of covered elitism, kind of covered class.
We can do follows, follow backs, or ask kissery. That was what was left in my notes. Following stuff and ask kissery.
Let's go. Let's spend a couple minutes on both. Which one do you want to do first?
Let's. It's fun to say. Let's get ask kissery out of the way real quick.
Okay.
I want to ask you. Do you get your ass kissed?
Yeah, sometimes. And like, I mean, it's always humbling. Like, you know, there's a difference between like being cocky or bragging or, you know, whatever it is. It's nice to have come somewhere in this industry, in this media sphere, whatever it is, where people are asking you for like advice or a retweet, or can they have your email, or can they have a fallback, like whatever it is, like it's to me, it's always flattering that somebody wants my attention in that regard. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And, but yeah, you see it all the time. And I'm not, you know, big enough yet to get it all the time, but you see guys where like somebody posts an article and it's been up 3 seconds and it has like 1,000 retweets. Or somebody posts an article and it's been up like 8 seconds. Someone's like, wow, great read. And you're like, there is no way. You haven't even clicked that link yet. You're probably not going to click that link because you already decided it's a good read and haven't read it yet.
Yeah. Why do you need to read it if you already know it's a good read?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's like guys like Lee Jenkins where we're like, yeah, Lee is the GOAT. Like Howard Beck. Howard Beck is the man. Anything Howard Beck writes, I'm going to read. I'll give that man a blind retweet any day because I know it's going to be good. But I still go and read it, but like I understand with like the guys that are that great in their field and you've read their work over and over. But I mean, blind retweets are more or less a disservice, right? You're sharing something you haven't really invested any time in. It could be garbage. You don't truly know. And yeah, you see that all the time. And sometimes it's not even people like, if you're going to kiss the butts of Lee Jenkins and Howard Beck, then fair enough, you're kissing the butts of the right guys. But like, they're doing that to people, you know, two or three or four tiers below them. And you're like, what does that do for you? No one advances themselves by being that subservient in that way. I think it's really easy to tell for myself too when people are being like, I always appreciate you sharing my work. Like, absolutely, even if you don't read it, like, I appreciate that you like me enough to do that. But I think I know like when someone comments on something that I've done or said, if they've actually read or thought about it or whatever, like it's hard to hide whether you're being genuine or not in 140 less characters. Right? Like you either know what you're talking about or you either thought about it or you didn't, kind of thing.
Yeah, I would certainly agree with that. Like you said earlier, there's like 5 different ways I want to go with this. One of them is quick shout out to Lee Jenkins, who we talked about, you know, replying before. If you say great job on an article, Lee Jenkins, he will respond thank you, like infallibly. Like I get thank yous from Lee Jenkins and it's like the coolest thing because I give him blind retweets and then I read the articles and like I'll stop what I'm doing. I remember I waited on campus. I was done for the day. But right when I'm about to leave the computer lab I was in, I saw new Lee Jenkins dropped and I didn't want to wait. So I just opened it up on the computer in class when I could have just left. I could have went home and I sat in class to read it. And it was a story on LeBron at the finals and it was so good. I like, did not regret my decision at all. And I tweeted him and he's like, oh, thanks. And I was like, this is the coolest. So shout out Lee Jenkins for being both a phenomenal writer and a very kind Twitter user. Lee Jenkins must secretly be Canadian or something.
But well, you know, just on Lee Jenkins, sorry, I'll let you go on more points, but on Lee Jenkins really quickly, like absolutely, like you said, he's super genuine. I mean, he must get a million comments like that. He always replies, absolutely. And I mean, I remember one time I worked on a piece really hard for Hoop last year about Kawhi Leonard. I was super excited about dropping this piece.
Oh, boy.
I worked so hard on it. 10 minutes. Like, I dropped it the night before. The editors were working through it. I was told it was going to drop about noon my time, which is 2 p.m. Eastern. You know, 1:45 or 1:30 in the afternoon, Lee Jenkins' piece on Kawhi Leonard. And I'm like, no. Like, no one's going to want two pieces on Kawhi Leonard. Why would anyone read my dribble when they have Lee Jenkins? Anyway, so I read this Lee Jenkins piece while I'm waiting for mine to come out. I'm like, wow, this is good. You know, I give him my typical dap. I'm like, good job, man. This is why you're the best. And like an hour later, I log into Twitter and he shared my piece. And he's like, thanks, Josh. Your piece was also good. I like this part.
Oh, I remember that.
Like showing me that he actually read it. And it was like the coolest thing ever. Like, again, like, you know, you come so far in this business and you try to act professional like this stuff doesn't matter to you. But this is part of the whole like class system where like it does matter, man. Like I've grown up reading Lee Jenkins. Like I appreciate that stuff. And I think that a lot of people appreciate that stuff, whether they're getting paid to write or not. Like there's always someone above you or before you where like a little bit of their respect or like notice obviously goes a long way. And that was like a really cool day for me.
Yeah. It's that was freaking awesome. I actually do remember that. And I was like, oh, I'm so damn jealous right now. But that's very well deserved. Both of your Kawhi pieces were good. The other thing I wanted to say is I feel like with Ask History, there's like a proportional amount of like Ask Pokery as well. I'd probably just foot and mouth on that one. But like there's like hate that'll come at you too. Just like there's a roughly equal, and you can correct me on this. Like I'm at 734. I just got a follower during the pod. So I don't have, you know, the sample size to confirm or deny, but it seems to me when I go through replies or whatever, because I'm a Twitter junkie, I'll admit it. It feels like half the people want to say, you know, oh, great job before they read the article. Half the people want to say that was fucking terrible before they read the article. Like, half the people want to attack someone bigger than them to try to move up. Half the people want to, you know, congratulate them. Is that true in your experience?
Like, for me, I would say it's like, I would say it's honestly more, I'm like happy to say it's probably more positive. Like, I think I have more people that share my work without reading it just to, like, you know, say that they're supporting me or, like, you know, get themselves on my mind versus, like, hate speech right away. However, that changes with players. Like, you write anything about Kobe that's not he blows sunshine out all holes, then you're going to have people before they even click the link coming to kill you, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it goes a little bit both ways, but I think when you get bigger, like, I think with guys like, God, I can't even believe I'm going to say this, like, it was Skip Bayless, right?
Yeah, oh yeah. I mean,
Skip Bayless is a miserable hack now, and he does whatever he has to do to get clicks and, you know, get trending, whatever. But, I mean, this guy was a legitimate journalist for a lot of years. He still has his moments. He still watched sports for a long time. There are things that Skip Bayless is on the money with from time to time. But as soon as that guy tweets anything, everyone calls him an idiot and a moron, which, you know, power to him. He wants that anyway.
Yeah.
But, I mean, sometimes he is right and sometimes he does have a good point. But because he's reached such a status and been such a, you know, jig off more or less the last couple of years in the show, you know, he's kind of earned that. But at the same breath, you know, he's right sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's certainly true. I think I actually have Skip Bayless blocked on Twitter because it was during a finals and I just saw just too many tweets. I was like, I don't want to see these anymore. And I probably could have just muted him, but I blocked him. Sorry, Skip. Not really. I think he has more than enough followers even without me.
Yeah, I think he'll endure.
Yeah, he'll make it through the day. So before we wrap up, let's talk about follows and follow backs. This is fascinating to me because I'm low-key obsessed with my following numbers. Like, I like my ratio and all that. And I'm just admitting a lot. This is like AA for Twitter users right now. Hi, my name's Ty, and I'm addicted to Twitter. And sometimes I don't do the, you know, follow over and over and over again. I think that's obnoxious. And I try not to ask people to follow me either because I feel like that just isn't a good look. But I will do the, like, cursory follow someone for a few days, then look back. Oh, they didn't follow me back, even though we're roughly in the same tier. All right, then, unfollowed.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I'm full disclosure. I get Twitter on the behest of a friend, my first year of journalism, telling me, you know, it's going to be part of this industry. You got to get on it. So I get on it. At first, I think it's ridiculous. I'm making fun of it. And I just slowly turn from, like, Twitter is stupid and I'm only doing this because I have to for school to, oh my God, get off my girlfriend, you know, every night, get off your phone.
And, yeah.
You know, it's funny, but with Twitter, like when I started, I, you know, wasn't into it, and I got into it and I saw the value, and I started, you know, before Twitter really cracked down on external sites, I had a site where, like, every night I would follow like 400 people with, like, I would search Kobe or NBA or whatever. I'd follow 400. I'd wait 48 hours, and whoever didn't follow me back, they were gone. Yeah. And, like, that's kind of how I, like, built it up for a while. And then, like, I landed a couple good internships, one with Dime when I was pretty young and one with Sportsnet. And obviously that helped kick it up a bit. But yeah, like, you know, I was committed to building it, and, like, building it was part of the fun. And then Twitter suspended my account, was like, don't do this anymore. Like, okay, I'm sorry. Sorry. So I haven't done that in a couple of years. But anyways, that's kind of how, you know, I really got rolling, started to get an audience. And it was really annoying, too, because you'd be, like, following, like, J.R. Smith or somebody, and, like, you would accidentally unfollow them, and you'd be like, no, you'll follow all these. But anyway, so getting lost where I'm going here. But anyways, follows and follow backs. So there's this whole culture of, like, I follow you. If we're, as you said, in the same tier and you don't follow me back, it's confusing. And I remember I was talking to Dan Carson, who works for Fox Sports. I'm not sure if you know him.
Yeah, formerly we follow each other, so I'm good with him.
Dan's a beauty. He puts out some of the best social stuff in the NBA Twitter sphere for sure. Loves J.R. Smith. I mean, if you're not following him before this, I'm happy to endorse Dan Carson right now. But Dan's talking about like how he has coworkers in the office, like that he sees every day, that he followed and they didn't follow him back.
That's
and
dirty.
He's like, what the hell? Like, they'll like acknowledge him, they'll like his tweet or whatever, but they won't give him a follow. They'll like, you know, pour the coffee for him, but they won't give him a follow.
Jeez.
That's so greasy to me.
That's,
and, like,
yeah, that's greasy.
And like, you know, I don't think I'm entitled or anything, but like sometimes I'll follow like a beat reporter with like 1,000 followers or something. Obviously I have a few more. Or like I'll retweet someone's work that I'm following and like they won't ever follow me back. And I'm like even from like a, even if you don't like me, like as someone who's trying to promote their own brand, wouldn't it be advantageous to like follow me and like build some sort of relationship? But yeah, I mean, even to me with like the amount of followers I have, sometimes I follow someone when they don't follow me back, I'm annoyed. I'm like, you know, what I do to you that you don't want to follow me? Like,
yeah.
Why wouldn't you follow me? You know, like there's this confusion, like I can help you or I'm, you know, bigger than you in this world or we're the same in this world. And if I don't have your respect enough to at least give me a follow, then, you know, there's definitely this like, I don't want to say animosity, that's harsh, but it's like, wow, I don't know if I like that guy because I don't think he likes me because he didn't follow me back.
Yeah, you're like low-key offended. You're like, really? You're not going to follow me back? Really? After everything I've done on Twitter? No, it's a real thing, though. It absolutely is. You'll be like, oh, come on. Like, you got 200 followers, kid. What are you doing? Follow me back. We sound so petty right now. We're going out on the most petty note, but this is an honest conversation. It really is like that. It 100% is. It's always nice when you get, you know, a big follow back. I remember you followed me. I was like, oh, that's dope. All right. I'm representing now here. Cause I think it was a little while ago. Cause you were on one of the earlier episodes of Time Out with Ty. I can't, it was like 20 or something. I mean, it was a while ago. And I've gotten,
at least a year.
So I've gotten, you know, slightly bigger since then. You know, it's a process. I feel like once you hit like a certain number, it gets easier to add more. Like, I feel like there's sort of a wall you have to get over, and then it gets a little easier from there. I mean, obviously, it doesn't just, like, incrementally go up. Like, you're not going to wake up tomorrow with 400,000. I mean, power to you if you do. I'd be happy. But I feel like once you get over, like, 1,000, you can grow from there more. Like, even, like, I remember it took me forever because I had an old Twitter, but it wasn't professional, so I deleted it. No more questions asked. And, like, it took me forever to get 200 followers, like months and months and months. And then it took me forever again to get 400 and then 500. And then it's sort of been going up like steadily, you know, a couple followers here and there, like every week since then. Like, it makes sense. I mean, the more people see your tweets, they retweet it to more people. You can grow more. It can be tough, though, to get over a certain amount, I feel like.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, even for me, there was times where, like, I hit a number and I just wouldn't move.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, I'm putting out content. I'm still tweeting all the time. I don't know why I'm not moving. And like, there have been months where I've gone up, say 500 followers. And there've been months where I've gone down 500 followers. And I really don't know what I did or didn't do and to get them or lose them. But you kind of wonder. And yeah, you get to a certain point and it kind of builds on itself. And obviously the harder you work and the funnier your tweets are. I mean, if you get a viral tweet, that always helps. But, like, it does sound petty what we were talking about before with, like, the follow back. But I think it's, like, a human need. You, like, want to feel, like, I don't – loved sounds weird here. But you want to feel
– That's like, true, though. Yeah, like, accepted, embraced.
And especially, like, with how much time we spend both on Twitter and in this Twitter community. And like we said earlier, you know, we're all on a podium in this big room. Some rooms are bigger than others, but you're in this room with all these people and, you know, you're looking up at the podium in someone else's room and rah-rah and raising that fist and pounding your feet when they say something. And when you say something and you're like, wow, they're not even in the room.
Yeah.
You know, why aren't they in the room when I'm stamping on stage? And I think I think it's just human. I think it's just normal to wonder why it is. And same way too, where, like you said, it's so nice to get a big follow. Sometimes, you know, I get a big follow and I know it's not professional. It's probably not a good look, but all I want to do is like direct message that person and be like, what did I tweet that made you laugh and finally made you come on board?
Yeah. You always wonder, right? Like, what was it? Like, what was it? Was it the piece? Was it the tweet? Like, what did someone say something? It's one of those things you're always curious. Like, what changed?
Yeah, absolutely. like my last humble brag of this pod, my last humble brag, I swear.
Sure.
But like Jerry Rice followed me like a couple weeks ago. And that was like Jerry Rice, like the GOAT, Jerry Rice followed me. And I'm like, I don't even, I don't even know. I have no idea why. Like, I have no idea. Like, I haven't written anything about football since I was in like my first or second year at college. No idea. Like, maybe Jerry Rice really likes basketball. I don't know. But like, it's taken all of my like, don't do it, don't do it. To be like, yo, Jerry, why'd you follow me, bro? Because you just know he saw something, and something was like, yeah, I'm gonna follow that guy.
Yeah,
but, you know, it has to be. If I meet him, who knows?
Yeah, we're rapid, but what top, before we go, most disappointing feeling is when you see a name you recognize followed you, like Bow Wow. Bow Wow is not a real one, but whoever, you know, a name you recognize, but it's, they haven't been famous for a while. They're like sort of quasi famous. And you're like, oh, wow, like I must be doing well. This person followed me. And you go to their profile. It's like 13 million people follow them, and they follow 12 million. And you're like, yeah. Oh, never mind then.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I know exactly where you're going with that one. And what's that guy's name? The crappy rapper who like cursed Kevin Durant or whatever his name was?
Lil B.
So like, I was talking some smack about him and being like, this is so stupid. I wish we'd stop talking about it.
Oh, he reads those. Story. He reads those tweets.
Well, yeah. And then he followed me and I was like, oh, maybe I'm going to be in my first rap beef. Like, this is going to be awesome. Like, I hope Lil B comes at me guns ablaze. It'll be just like 50, like where his name got bigger because Jay-Z dissed him. Like, I have this whole scenario in my head. And then just like I look at his page and he's following like 50,000, has like 55,000. I'm like, oh, he didn't even read the tweets. He's just like, he's just doing what I do. Like that hack, that following churn. Yep. Who does that?
Lil B does that apparently. Hey, quick plugs before we go. You can follow me at Ty Windish on Twitter, wherever. Check out my work at BehindTheBuckPass.com, HoopsHabit.com. Shout out to Joey Burbs for doing the intro and outro music for the podcast. And check out more episodes. Subscribe, rate, and you can get merch and find them all at TimeOutWithTy.com. Josh, let me hear your plugs. I said them briefly earlier. I'm sure you can go into a little more detail. Where can the listeners find you?
Yeah, so my name's Josh Eberly. I write primarily for the NBA's Hoop Mag. Our print edition is actually dropping this month.
Ooh.
So make sure you check that out. We got our cover art, came out yesterday. It's looking pretty nice. At Hoop Mag is where I work. At Josh Eberly for me. And hey, if you're feeling generous, give my Facebook page a like. We all know Facebook's inferior to Twitter, but I'm trying to branch out a little bit.
Those are solid plugs. Thank you. Josh, thanks for coming on. Sorry I said your name wrong at the jump. I thought it was Eberly. My bad.
It's all good, man. I think I called you T.I.
Yeah,
it
happens.
We were going to end on a rap theme. I just knew it.
So. Yeah, you predicted it. It worked out pretty well. Thanks for coming on. Have a good one, my dude.
Yeah, thank you.